From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest on this edition of the program is Her Excellency Dina Kawar, Ambassador of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan to the United States, and we're coming to you from the Jordanian Embassy in Washington. Prior to her appointment, Ambassador Kawar served as the permanent representative of Jordan to the United Nations and led the Jordanian delegation during Jordan's non-permanent membership of the UN Security Council. She was, in fact, the first Arab woman to preside over the council. She also served as ambassador to France and was non-resident ambassador to Portugal. We'll ask Ambassador Kawar to reflect on President Barack Obama's legacy in the Greater Middle East and speculate on the regional challenges facing the prospective Trump administration. Ambassador Kawar, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm very happy to be with you today.
And thank you for hosting us here at the embassy. Ambassador Kawar, before we discuss the U.S. policy toward the Middle East in a Trump administration, I'd like you to reflect on President Obama's legacy. You know, it's no secret that many regional leaders have criticized President Obama for, quote, retreating from the region and empowering Iran by virtue of being very laser-focused on clinching the Iran nuclear deal and doing so secretly. How does Jordan view his administration's legacy with regard to the Greater Middle East?
I hear a lot the expression disengagement. Perhaps people like to refer to Obama's years in the White House, disengagement from war and military involvement. But I don't think that we can say he has been disengaged diplomatically and he has not made efforts in the region. I mean, if you look at Secretary Kerry's efforts, be it on Iran deal, be it on Syria, on Libya, on Yemen, I think that it would be unfair to say that they were disengaged. When I was at the Security Council for the year and a half that I was there, of course, you get to have access and knowledge of what is going on in the diplomatic field. And it's very clear that the administration was very active trying to get to a solution. First of all, I think President Obama came to the presidency with the legacy of the Iraq War, and the Iraq War was not an easy affair. He wanted to withdraw from Afghanistan because I can understand, as he was an American president, towards his own people's interests and having to have less involvement. But I think the Iran deal, to which, by the way, we actually voted for because we were in the council, is not the issue. The issue is the political involvement of Iran in certain areas in the Middle East that does worry some of the Arab countries or most of them. And I think at the end of the day, it is important to address that aspect, number one. And number two, it's very important that we find a way, and that's probably the challenge of the next administration, to come out of this sectarian way of seeing things, sectarian being Shiites and Sunni. You know, we Jordanian have a king who comes from the family of the Prophet. And when you're family of the Prophet, you're both for Shia and Sunni. So it is unfortunate to see that this conflict between the both is becoming on a sectarian issue when in reality it's a pure political one. But it's very clear that the wars that are happening in the Middle East are not easy. First of all, because there are wars within states. It's not between two countries, but intra-country. So you have to deal with the constitution of the Syrian society after a war. In Yemen, it's between the Yemenis themselves. And in Iraq, it has to become back stable. In Libya, we have two Libyas almost. So these are wars that are very complicated because they are also the heritage of years and years of complications. And I think if one has to be optimistic, and only because we have no other choice than to be optimistic, is to say that we hope that the next phase would build up stronger societies and we can get rid of the mistakes of the past 100 years, and that we can build up societies that are multidimensional and that are inclusive of all sorts of societies where everybody feels they have part of the cake. And as long as we don't get to this phase, you know, 100 years in the life of a region is a small time. the miseries and the sadness that we are seeing in the wars, it's sad and it's unfortunate. But we need to go back and go to the basics and say, how can we build modern societies, modern cultures, and get back to a kind of representative societies where everybody feels that they want to maintain this system and go forward.
Ambassador Kawar, you said that Jordan voted or is in favor of the Iran nuclear deal, but some of your neighbors, particularly in the Gulf region, are not too happy about it. And President-elect Trump has said that he might reconsider it. Let me ask you what your position is with respect to this deal. Would you like to see it dismantled? Or, as you intimated in your answer, would you like to have the deal remain but see a more muscular posture on the part of the United States vis-a-vis Iran's so-called nefarious activities in the region, its support of proxy Shia militias, whether in Yemen or Syria, and its actual rise in the region as a hegemon, which some neighbors see as a threat?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter issue. I don't think the Iran deal in itself, when it comes to the nuclear part, is the problem. I think the problem is about the activities and the fact that the deal perhaps did not stress more on the political side. I know what some of the Arab and Gulf states have to say, and of course we agree with them, but we have to get to that next step and say, look, let's first of all try to solve all these issues in the Middle East. And when you want to deal with Syria, when you want to deal with Yemen, when you need to deal with Iraq, the Iranian presence is an issue. So there's no escape from that. And I think that we have to get to the second phase, and that's the challenge of this new administration.
Well, speaking of that, what we're seeing, or at least hearing so far from President-elect Trump, is that, especially on Syria, he says he would like to work with Russia. And, of course, Russia has been backing the regime of Bashar al-Assad, an Alawite regime closely allied with Iran. So does that concern you that President-elect Trump is talking about a much closer, friendlier relationship with Russia, even as it's a very strong ally of the current regime in Syria, that is the Bashar al-Assad regime, which we just witnessed recently has overtaken eastern Aleppo and is strongly allied with Iran?
I have a few things to clarify about this. If people are surprised by any relationship between the U.S. and Russia, it's not new. In fact, the relationship was okay until the Ukrainian issue came and then afterwards the Syrian. If you want to solve the issue of Syria, who do you want who to talk with whom? I mean, honestly, I'm surprised sometimes that people even pose or ask this question. You want to move forward. Syria has suffered. It's a country that's broken. And the society, in order to rebuild itself, would require years and years. Rebuilt in a democratic system, but also rebuilt the emotional and social breakings that has happened, because there's no one family that has not lost members. This will take years, but we have to start. And to say from now we don't want to talk to the Russians because they've helped the regime and because the regime is with Iran, who do you want us to talk to anyway? I mean,
I didn't imply that we shouldn't, or that an incoming administration shouldn't talk to the Russians or even try to have a better relationship. It's just that you saw Secretary of State Kerry talking to them time and time and time again. Everything breaks down. We don't have the same definition of who the adversary is in Syria. It seems by their actions that the Putin regime, in conjunction with Bashar al-Assad, actually put all the rebels and even innocent Syrians in one same category, all as terrorists, when all of us here know, in fact, that there is a difference between the so-called IS terrorists or extremists and then rebels who are simply fighting for basic freedoms and who are, yes, both opposed to IS and the Bashar al-Assad regime.
Yeah. No, I'm aware of the differences that have been ongoing since the last weeks and weeks on. It's about the opposition and quote-unquote how clean they are or not clean. And in the meantime, there's a lot of destruction that's also being done. But I agree with you. I only wanted to say two things, and I don't know if it's an answer, but it's a reality. First of all, as His Majesty said in a recent interview, he said there's no way out other than having the US and Russia sit and talk and try to sort it out. There's no way out. And I would add to that, when we were following the Syrian file, because it was there in this council, you could see the tension when both the U.S. and Russia do not see eye to eye. And you could see how many things are solved. And facilitated when they both look and see eye to eye. So really, we have no choice. I mean, it's not even a question of discussion. It's just that we have to get to that point. And now your question, is it going to happen? You just mentioned the Secretary Kerry has been doing it. I don't know. Maybe with the new administration, there will be another dynamic. But as embassies and as diplomats in Washington, we're watching all these movements and changes with a lot of interest.
Irrespective of the incoming administration, Ambassador Kawar, we are seeing a new dynamic in the region as a result of what has happened in Syria recently. We see an emboldened Hezbollah being deployed in Syria and Yemen in service of Iranian interests. Does this new regional dynamic concern Jordan?
Well, of course. I mean, first of all, we're part of the region, so whatever happens around us does affect us. Number two, the issue of the Syrian war and the refugees is affecting us. And here, if you allow me to remind those who hear us or listening to us, we have around 1.4 million Syrian refugees, which is almost 20% of our total population. 1.4 million in a country whose economy is also having hard times to meet its own needs, in a country whose economy has suffered because of less investments. People are worried to bring in their investments. The tourism sector, which is a major sector, is being affected. And we have lack of water, we have lack of resources. But in spite of all, we are trying to do our best to accommodate the refugees in terms of their education, in terms of their health, and even employment. And in the recent London conference in February, we decided to work on the resilience plan of Jordanian society and the economy in order for us to be able to help the Syrians. Now, having said that, I always remind this to everybody who's listening, it's exactly like having 50, 60 million Americans come in 2-3 years and live in the United States. So what we're having to handle is not easy. So this is the answer to your question. Of course, everything is related. And the difficult part about the Middle East is that when there is one complication, automatically there's 100. But the good part is that if things start to sort themselves out, then the adverse reaction happens and can see an improvement on all of the files because they're all interrelated. So His Majesty keeps saying that we need to deal with the Syrian issue. We need to redefine. We need to continue on the fight against Daesh, which Jordan is playing a major role.
Daesh or Islamic or State?
Islamic State. So it's very important that we continue our cooperation on all these issues.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Her Excellency Dina Kawar, Ambassador of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan to the United States, and we're coming to you from the embassy here in Washington. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA, or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout-out to loyal listener Herbert Daniel from Jos, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. We're back to our special guest, Ambassador Dina Kawar of Jordan. Ambassador Kawar, let's turn now to a prospective Trump administration. Yeah. From what we've heard about Mr. Trump and what you can glean from some of his nominations to national security and foreign policy positions, such as Rex Tillerson, CEO of ExxonMobil for Secretary of State, General James Mattis for Defense Secretary, and I will emphasize that these are simply nominations. They have to go through the Congress to be approved. But from all of these names, are you relatively optimistic? Do you have reason to be skeptical? What is Jordan looking for in a post-Obama leadership?
Some of the names we know in Jordan, perhaps not me personally, but His Majesty knows and has dealt with, like General Mattis and others. We hope that, first of all, the fight against Daesh, which we know it will be the case, will continue with the same level of intensity because we have no choice. We're all in the same boat, and either we all drown together or we don't. And what His Majesty keeps saying is that fighting Daesh is fighting them everywhere at the same time. Because if you decide to fight them in Syria, but then they move somewhere else and we don't do that fight at the same time, then it's a problem. So it's a universal issue. And right now, borders are open and people move from one place to another. So that's why it's a universal matter. We hope that there will be a ceasefire in Syria as soon as possible. And then from there, we hope there will be engagement for a sort of transition in Syria. The Syrian file, I know, is top on the agenda. And according to what I hear from people around the transition team, it's one of the top issues. And that's understandable because this war has gone beyond Syria. It has affected the whole region, and if not the whole world, with the refugee issue as well.
You talked about fighting Daesh, also known as the Islamic State. We've seen a lot of military effort to try to destroy Daesh, but we know that military means are not sufficient because the ideology remains. What recommendations does His Majesty have with respect to combating the ideology of Daesh?
His Majesty always said that there are three phases. You know, you have the military, which is the first phase, and then you have the security issues, and then the third, and probably the most complicated and difficult but phase, is the ideology. Because you can get rid of somebody who is behaving bad, but you want to make sure that this doesn't go, you know.
Somebody else could pop up in his...
Yeah, and so we are very, very active in the counter-Daesh and counter-terrorism programs that are happening everywhere. We are very careful about, you know, including in our curriculum and in our education system, the idea that this is not Islam. Daesh is using the religion of Islam for their own interests and for their own ideology, but they have nothing to do with Islam. Islam doesn't ask you to kill and maim and rape and disrespect the minorities. So all these things are issues that we are working on. And these are efforts that are being conducted everywhere, including other Middle Eastern countries, but also in Africa and other Muslim countries. And I think it's starting to pay off, you know. I heard or read the other day that the anti-Daesh ideology on the social web is becoming even more present and more felt than the Daesh propaganda, if you want.
Indeed.
So it will take a bit of time, but it's starting.
Ambassador Kawar, His Majesty King Abdullah II, and of course his father, King Hussein, have always pioneered and supported a conflict-ending agreement between Israel and the Palestinians that would result in a two-state solution, a Palestinian state side-by-side with Israel in security and peace. It seems as if we're as far away than ever from this, and that this issue has taken a back seat to the Syrian conflict, to the rise of Iran, to fighting Daesh, to the problem in putting Iraq back together. Do you think there's any hope now in trying to revive a peace agreement between Israelis and Palestinians, even as we see Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu almost more reluctant, in a sense, to make concessions, and the Palestinians are in their own turmoil?
Not only do we have to do it, but we have no choice. And I tell a lot of the Jewish American community that we meet here, you have to encourage the Israeli government to go ahead and push for peace. It's in their interests. It's not only in the interest of the Palestinians to have a state, and it's not only their legitimate right to have a state, but it's also, if you care about the Israelis, it's their interest to have a state and to become fully independent. We keep calling about addressing the worry we have about the settlements and the increase in settlements, because they are making any prospects of towards a peace and a viable two-state solution more and more complicated. But we will not give up. We're also waiting to see what will happen with this new administration. Are they going to pick up the Israeli-Palestinian? How would they do it? All these, for diplomats and for us in the region, is very important.
Why is it important? Because if you hear some arguments from the Israeli side, well, it's sort of less important because these other issues overshadow that. And why is it important?
I'll tell you what. People who say, look at Syria, it's burning. Look at Iraq, it's not stable. Look at Yemen, there's another war. Look at Libya, and that, they're just, I'm not saying they're wrong. Look at, yes, we have wars going on. But this is not a wise way of dealing with the issue, because the Israeli-Palestinian conflict needs to come to an end. We saw the Gaza wars. You get a sort of a quote-unquote break from a conflictual situation, as in wars, and then all of a sudden it comes back. And then when it comes back, it's worse. we cannot afford to get back to another Gaza war or another South Lebanon war with the northern part of Israel. This is important for the stability of the region. And for those that I see, I tell them it's also important for Israel's security to have a stable Palestinian state next to them.
I know specifically that there's some sort of a French initiative within the United Nations. Can that go forward, given the Trump administration? Is that independent of, and does it have its own momentum?
No, I think we go with the idea that any initiative that does call for peace and for going back to discussions and negotiations and for solving the situation is welcome. We've met with the French envoy, and he came several times to Jordan and met with our minister, and we're very supportive. However, what will happen between the French and the new administration, we hope it will all go in the same sense, which is trying to put all the parties to the table and try to go forward.
Ambassador Kaur, we talked earlier about Iran and the rise of Iran in the region and the tension between Iran and some of the Gulf Arab Sunni states, perhaps with the exception of Oman. What do you see are points of convergence between the Sunni Arab states, including the Gulf states, and Iran that could be enhanced and that could try to break this impasse and this also the Shia-Sunni split?
You know, that's what I said at the very beginning, but I definitely would like to repeat it as a reminder. We should not fall into a sectarian conflict between Shia and Sunni. It's not right. There are lots of Shiites in the Arab world and who've been there for ages and years and who are Arabs and very well integrated. And therefore, we should be able to call things by their names and deal with them that way. So
I think that's a very good point. So let's set aside the sectarian difference for now. But many Arab states, and I'm not saying Jordan in particular, but some Arab states just simply do not like the Persian-Iranian power hegemon gaining ground. That's another point of contention.
Well, we always speak about that, and His Majesty in the recent interview he did mention that it should not be the case and should stop, and that it is a worry for all of us.
Let's turn now to Jordan's challenges, its own internal economic and political challenges. You are surrounded by nations in conflict, Iraq, Syria. As you rightly pointed out, you are hosting so many Syrian refugees, and you're to be lauded for that. But it's a strain on your economy. We note that there were economic problems such that they even sparked demonstrations earlier this year, a lot of high unemployment. What is Jordan doing to address these enormous internal challenges?
We are trying our best, but the most important thing is that we're trying to remind the international community that just by being neighbors to Syria does not mean that we have to take the load of this war alone on our shoulders. It is too much for a small country like Jordan. And the strength and health of a good Jordanian economy is good for everybody. The international community needs to come and help Jordan in its efforts to maintain a resilient country, resilient economy, be able to help the refugees. The more we are able to help the refugees, the more they're able to sustain themselves and then probably go back home with a generation that has had an education, with a generation that was able to work and help their families, and a generation that has had access to health and a good living as much as we can give them. There's too much expectations of us. And sometimes I say it's a good thing because they look highly up to us. But there is so much we can take. And I want to remind everybody the importance of coming in and helping us in that sense.
Well, in that regard, Ambassador, what specifically would you like to see happen? What does Jordan need more to cope with this burden?
Well, let's say the resilience plan that we have now has had an explanation of the things we would want to do. I think the international community should step in and fulfill their pledges and bring in the money that they did promise. We cannot afford to have the difficulties we have with an unemployment rate as high as we do. And the strange thing is that the international community and many of the richer countries expect us to give employment, which we're doing, education, which we're doing, health, which we're doing. And then when you want to ask for 3 refugees to go into one of their countries, it becomes a big deal. So I find that it's unfair and too much to ask of Jordan. And it's very, very important that this new model that we're trying to create in Jordan, which is a resilience model in dealing with the refugees, that it be successful. And if it is successful, it will be a new way of dealing with these refugees anywhere in the world.
You called it a resilience model.
Yes.
How do you...
It means before, the idea of helping refugees was the idea of sending food, money, blankets to refugees. But the host community was completely forgotten. That's number one. Nowadays, you cannot do that. Not only because you cannot forget the host community that is hosting all these refugees, but also refugees need education. The UN has said that any refugee stays at least 17 years out of his home. So 17 years, do you want two generations not to get education? Do you want family members not to give a living to their kids? Is it intelligent when they go back to their home and you've lost all these generations? So this is a new way of seeing the issue of refugees instead of seeing it as just feeding and covering and making sure they have a warm place to sleep. And it's more respectful for them. And to be practical for the hosting community is very important.
Ambassador Kaur, back to the incoming Trump administration. I wonder if you would be kind enough to share with us perhaps some friendly advice that Jordan has for the incoming administration regarding how to interact with its partners in the Middle East.
They're coming at a very difficult time anyway with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, with the tensions in the region. So I think the most important thing is for them to sit with their partners, our countries, with the leaders, and to listen and hear us out and see what our interests are, what is our outlook. Much work has been done in the region. There's so much to build on anyway. And sometimes we're not going to recreate facts, but perhaps to advise and see how we can go forward.
In addition, Ambassador, talking about the region, of course you and Egypt have peace agreements with the State of Israel, but many other countries don't. But we're hearing that there's perhaps more room for cooperation, maybe points of convergence between Israel and some of the other Arab countries like Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf states. Do you see, because of the rise of Daesh and sort of the rise of Iran, which many Arab countries, as Israel does, see as a threat, do you see some more convergence between Israel and the Arab states? And is that a positive thing? Do you think that can be built upon to press for Israeli-Palestinian peace and maybe help to combat, you know, some of the nefarious threatening activities of Iran in the region?
I don't know if there's convergence or it's circumstantial or what, but there's a few things that I would say that at the end of the day, if the Palestinians and Israelis do not solve the main issue, nothing else will work. And I've always wondered why the Arab Initiative was not taken or even invented by Israelis themselves. They said no to something that is fantastic, which is to have peace with all of the Arab countries, including the Muslim countries behind. That was an opportunity that was missed.
Is it too late to take it up?
It's never too late if we start having the will to go back to peace. That is what's missing. And one has to feel that, is there the urgency for this seeking of peace? That is the question to ask. And we hope that the Israelis would want to go back to peace and, you know, extend a hand for that. We cannot forget that. Whatever there is circumstantial, whatever there is talking to each other, whatever there is economic this or that I hear, it's not a substitute for a real peace and for solving the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and for having a Palestinian independent state. That is for sure. And if this issue is not addressed, it will come back again and again and again.
And as we close, Ambassador Kaur, what worries you most for Jordan and the stability of the region?
I think the worry is the youth, all these young people with lots of dynamics and intelligence and will and hope. That's the major issue, of the fact that our region is majority youth. And the most important thing is to give them the education they deserve, but also the opportunities to have a good life, to work and to produce. And that's, I think, the main challenge.
Her Excellency Dina Kaur is the ambassador of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan to the United States. Ambassador Kaur, thank you so much for your time and your insights.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer and producer was Gary Jaffe. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.